Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I'd like a little review here. As we continue to look at wars and rumors of wars and unprecedented peace treaties that may be possibly setting the stage for the future Gog-Magog war in Ezekiel 38 and 39 in the Old Testament, I want to continue to look at current events. Last week, we looked at continued provocative actions in the Mediterranean Sea involving Russia, Iran, and Syria. We have in the past also looked at some of Turkey's provocative actions towards Greece in this area as well. But I would like to share this article concerning Greece and Turkey from The National Interest by Peter Susiu, October 7th, 2020. Could Greece and Turkey tear NATO asunder is the title of this article. Greece and Turkey are at an impasse due to energy reserves, including the discovery of natural gas in the eastern Mediterranean waters. Since 1952, Greece and Turkey have been de facto allies for no other reason than both countries are members of NATO. Relations between the two nations have been marked with periods of open hostility since Greece won its independence from the Ottoman Emperor in 1830. Of course, that was the Turkish, ruling empire then. And in the past 190 years, the two nations have fought four rather major wars. While the countries had a period of good and almost friendly relations in the 30s and 40s, relations have declined considerably in recent years and are now at the lowest point since the 1974 Cypriot coup d'etat, which was followed by the Turkish invasion of Cyprus, which left the island nation divided. The current hostilities are rooted in the Balkan Wars of 1913, which gave Greece all of the Aegean islands except Imbros and Tenedos. Many of the small islands are barely more than 3 nautical miles off the Turkish coast, and since the end of the Second World War, Turkish officials have called for a delimitization of territorial waters, airspace, and other related zones of control. The issue has been renewed, and the two nations are at an impasse due to energy reserves, including the discovery of natural gas, ding, 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 in the eastern Mediterranean waters. Both countries claim the waters and seabed off some of the islands, which can be as much as 22 hours by ferry from Athens, yet are within visual range of the Turkish coast. In August, Ankara dispatched a seismic vessel to survey the seafloor for hydrocarbons reportedly near the bitterly contested Exclusive Economic Zone, or EEZ, claimed by Cyprus. If the situation in the Mediterranean isn't bad enough, there's another crisis brewing in the Caucasus as Armenia and Azerbaijan entered into open warfare earlier this month, and I've commented and reported on that in the past. As the Federalist reported, this is at the historic fault line between traditional European Christendom and the Ottoman frontiers. France and Russia have unsurprisingly shown support for Armenia. Russia has an air base in the country, while Turkey, which has increased in a policy of neo or new Ottomanism, or, the Ottoman Empire type views, under Erdogan's rule, has thrown its support behind Azerbaijan. What about NATO? Well, while it is unlikely that France could get dragged into a war in the Caucasus, the situation between Greece and Turkey is so bad that on Monday, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg voiced hope that an agreement by Athens and Ankara to avoid potential military tensions could lead to diplomatic negotiations and perhaps allow the two to settle their long-standing differences. NATO even hosted a set of technical talks between the two nations, and that resulted in an agreement on a military deconfliction mechanism, which included the setting up of a hotline between Athens and Ankara. Well, this just in, actually this was just in on October 30th, 2020, not too long ago, the New York Post reported, and their reporter Yaron Steinbuch, reported deadly earthquake rocks Turkey, Greece, and a triggering a tsunami. You may have heard about this. I don't know. You know, you talk about wars and rumors of wars, and you have to also think about earthquakes in diverse places, don't you? Although there's, you know, been earthquakes throughout history. Anyway, I digress. The point is, this is a powerful 7.0 earthquake in the Aegean Sea, rocked Turkey and Greece on Friday, unleashing a tsunami, leveling buildings, and killing at least 14 people, officials said. And by the way, the biggest that I ever went through when I lived in Los Angeles, the 20 years that I lived there, the largest I ever experienced was a 6.7, and that was plenty big. So, you know, let me just tell you, there's bigger than 7.0, but 7.0 is really big. So interesting that they had this earthquake where there's all this strife going on with Turkey and Greece. Just an interesting little event, I think. A minor tsunami washed through the Seferisfar district of Izmir, Turkey's third largest city, said a man named Ozanar, director of the Istanbul-based Kandili Observatory and Earthquake Research Institute. Those dead included 12 people in Izmir, including one who drowned, and more than 500 others were injured. Eight people also suffered light injuries on the Greek island of Samos, which has a population of about 45,000. The trembler, which was felt from Istanbul to Athens, hit close to Izmir, which has about 4.3 million residents. It was a very big earthquake. It's difficult to have a bigger one, one of the reporters said, according to Reuters. We have never experienced anything like it, said George Dionysiou, the local vice mayor. People are panicking. And then a related article from The Independent, a British newspaper. Greece-Turkey earthquake latest. And this latest was again on October the 30th, the same day, actually, 2020. Sam Hancock and Conrad Duncan reported on this. A massive 7.0 earthquake has hit parts of Greece and Turkey, leaving both countries rattled. 17 people have been reported dead so far in Turkey, according to its disaster management authority, and another two deaths were confirmed in the Greek island of Samos. Video footage on social media showed buildings in the Turkish city of Izmir had been seriously damaged. Videos also showed flooded streets in the city, apparently caused by a small tsunami following the earthquake. Now, I want to segue to the next article here we want to talk about. I mentioned at the end of last week's podcast about the most recent peace partner with Israel in the Abrahamic Accords. And here's an article which is from, it's called the Barnabas Aid. It came out November and 12th issue, 2020. And the Barnabas Aid has a small article about Sudan. It says, Sudan agrees to separate religion and state, ending 30 years of Islamic rule. That's interesting. 30 years of cruel Islamic rule officially came to an end in Sudan when Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok signed an accord on September the 3rd, a deal ending Sudan's 30 years of rule under Islamic law and Islam as the official state religion has been agreed between the transitional government and rebel groups. And the key word here is transitional government. So, but I'll get back to that a little bit later in my podcast. The state shall not establish an official religion, says the agreement. No citizen shall be discriminated against based on their religion. The deal came less than a week after the government signed a peace accord with an alliance of rebel groups on August 31st, ending decades of conflict in Darfur and the border states of Blue Nile and South Kordofan, which left hundreds of thousands dead and millions more displaced. Islamists have called for the government to be overthrown, describing the reforms as a war against virtues. All right. And now the next article, and this goes all the way back to August 26, 2020, from Israel Unwired by Mika Geffen. And the article, of course, as I say, it's a little dated, but the title is Peace with Sudan Really Going to Happen? You know, remember, Sudan is the place, was the hiding place for Osama bin Laden once upon a time. And in fact, Black Hawk Down, the movie that was based on the true incident of one of our helicopters that went down over there in Sudan, that all happened in Sudan. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo traveled from Israel to Sudan on what was the first nonstop flight between the two countries. This has left many observers assuming that Sudan will be making peace with Israel next. However, Sudan's prime minister has appeared to pour cold water, has appeared to pour cold water on that theory. And of course, that is, I am not mandated to normalize ties with Israel, says the prime minister, Abdul Hamdok, and that's the man I just mentioned in the other article from Barnabas Aid. You know, I would say it'll be a tentative peace, and I would say that I'm not so sure this guy's in charge, Mr. Hamdok, but anyway, I'll have more to say as we go along. That being said, there's a lot of evidence that this may actually be happening. Sudan has a real interest in shifting from the Iranian orbit, which they have already begun, to the West. Being one of the largest countries in Africa and yet rattled by war has left the nation in search of a new path. Could that path run through Israel? And my comments would be probably only running through Israel during the Ezekiel 38-39 battle and invasion attempt upon Israel, and basically being run over by Almighty God, because we know how that's going to turn out, because we have access to what God's word says. Now, here is, of course, the updated article concerning the peace deal with Sudan. This is from Fox News. And by the way, I just grabbed the closest article I could on this event, and it happened to be Fox News. I don't endorse Fox News. In fact, you know, by the way, for those looking for a good TV news source, since Fox has really gone the way of the other left-wing mainstream media, I highly recommend Newsmax TV. I think it's an excellent source for your news and truth, basically. Not necessarily theological truth, but political and current events and what have you. Anyway, the title of this article by Morgan Phillips from October 23rd, 2020, is "Trump Announces Peace Deal Between Sudan and Israel, Says More Nations Will Normalize Relations." Sudan is the, and by the way, as you're hearing this, of course, you know that the election in America has not been completely authorized yet. It's not a fact yet. So we're still waiting to see what's going to happen between Trump and Biden here. Anyway, Sudan is the third Arab state to do so as part of the U.S. brokered deals in the run-up to Election Day. President Trump on Friday announced a peace deal that would normalize ties with both between Israel and Sudan, claiming there would be many more peace deals to come in the Middle East. Trump said Sudan had demonstrated a commitment to battling terrorism. "This is one of the great days in the history of Sudan," Trump said, adding that Israel and Sudan have been in a state of war for decades. The president said that at least five other countries wanted peace with Israel. "We have many lined up. They want to come in, get the deal done." Senior advisor to the president, Jared Kushner, who has been involved in brokering the deals, agreed that other countries in the Middle East would soon follow suit. Trump said that even Iran would someday normalize relations with Israel. And of course, my comment would be, yeah, if so, it would be some type of a fake peace, of course, just so that Israel would drop their guard, because we know that Iran will be one of the invading armies in Ezekiel 38 and 39. So I also said not going to happen. Kind of a doubt that there's going to be peace. Well, there's certainly not going to be any true peace with Israel and Iran, at least in the future, in the biblical future, let's say. Now, you know, and I would also say I pray that President Trump would study Bible prophecy. So I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, Iran ultimately will become a member of this whole thing, Trump said. "Look, someday I'd love to help Iran get back on track. They've gone from a rich country to a poor country in 3 years," he said. "But they can't have nuclear weapons," he continued. "It's always death to Israel. That's all they shout. So they can't have nuclear weapons." The president also said that a deal between Israel and the Palestinian region may be on the horizon. "Palestinians, they're wanting to do something. I'm sure that will get done too." You know, probably they're wanting to get something done because they feel they have no leverage the way things have been going for them. Trump says he expects Saudi Arabia to come to the table for a deal soon. The last part of the article. Friday's deal, which would deepen Sudan's engagement with the West, follows Trump's conditional agreement this week to remove the North African nation from the list of state sponsors of terrorism if it pays compensation to American victims of terror attacks. Secretary of State Pompeo said in a ceremony announcing the deal that victims of terror would receive $335 million in compensation from Sudan. The money is meant for victims of the 1998 bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania by the Al-Qaeda network while its leader, Bin Laden, was living in Sudan. Trump said on Tuesday that once the funds were transferred, he would remove Sudan from the list. A senior U.S. official said Sudan had borrowed the money needed to pay that amount. But these recent recognitions of Israel have undermined the traditional Arab consensus that there can be no normalization with Israel before the establishment of an independent Palestinian state. The Palestinians say the recognitions amount to betrayal, while Israel says the Palestinians have lost what they have seen as their veto over regional peace efforts. Trump said the deal will enhance Israel's security and end Sudan's isolation from the world. Sudan is on a fragile path to democracy. Boy, you got that right. Fragile path to democracy after a popular uprising just last year led the military to overthrow the longtime autocrat Omar al-Bashir. A military-civilian government rules the country with elections possible in late 2022. Of course, that's only 2 years away, isn't it? Unlike with Iran in the UAE, there's been a state of hostilities between Sudan and Israel, even if they have not been in direct conflict. And my comment is, that's what I'm talking about, that state of hostilities. And of course, again, if you study scripture in Ezekiel 38 and 39, you see that Sudan is one of the players in that invasion. And so in that, having said that, here's an article, and this is old news, actually, as it comes from July 16th, 2018. But I think, you know, it's worth looking at. It's old news, but still highlights the instability and the fluidity and the fragility of what's going on with Sudan and in other areas of the world. And we will see, as we will see also in the second article, I have two older articles. This one is, as I say, July 16, 2018. Author unknown. It's from the Middle East Monitor. Russia and Sudan look to develop military cooperation. Russian President Putin met with Sudanese counterpart al-Bashir, who's not there now, he's been ousted, on Saturday, with both leaders pledging to develop military cooperation in the near future. We have good opportunities to develop relations in a wide range of sectors, including defense technology, said Putin. This cooperation is developing. He noted a substantial growth in trade and an increase in Russian wheat exports to Sudan. al-Bashir hailed Russia for encouraging shifts in defense technology and military cooperation. We see big exchanges between specialists in Russia and Sudan, he told Putin. A large number of Russian specialists work in our country, and this is why we praise highly the role that your country plays in preparing Sudanese military personnel. The presidents are expected to meet again in September to discuss ways to develop agriculture cooperation and enhance tourism. The two leaders last met in November in the Russian city of Sochi, with both expressing a desire to enhance military ties. At the time, al-Bashir even offered to construct an airbase for Russia on the Red Sea coast. The government in Khartoum hopes to enhance Russian investments in Sudan, especially in the gold, oil, and gas fields, and to use the income to fund the modernization of its army's weapons. Again, this was just a couple of years ago. Al-Bashir was in Moscow. Okay, I'm going to skip that. My comments. Since this article was written, al-Bashir was ousted in a military coup, as I mentioned. So it seems to me that Sudan's future is certainly still uncertain. In fact, here's the title of an article from the Congressional Research Service, Sudan's Uncertain Transition. And this is from July 17th, 2019. Just, you know, a year and a half ago, a little less than a year and a half ago. Overview. Sudan's future is uncertain in the aftermath of President Omar al-Bashir's ouster as elements of his regime have sought to retain power in the face of a popular uprising and international pressure. Now listen to this. The Sudanese military has a history of intervention in politics. The 1989 coup in which Bashir came to power was the country's fourth. Sudan also has a long history of rebellion and resistance. While the armed uprisings are more widely known, mass protests against military regimes in 1964 and 1984 spurred coups that led to brief periods of civilian rule. And once again, my comments, so it doesn't surprise me that Ezekiel 38 lists Sudan as one of the invaders. And it also doesn't surprise me at the hesitancy of the Prime Minister Hamdok when he said, "I don't have the authority," or whatever he said, to bring about peace with Israel. You know, it was like he was treading lightly concerning circumstances that, you know, it's very fragile. You have the people, the populace there wanting one thing perhaps, the military wanting something else perhaps. They've had a history of these interventions, and very fragile. So the peace that is now been put in place, I doubt will be with us for that much longer. And in fact, if Trump is no longer president, which is certainly a possibility, you're liable to see a whole lot of things changing really soon. And as everything continues to remain fluid in the Middle East and in the Mediterranean, etc. Now, I want to move to my next article from the Bessa Center. This is actually October 26, 2020. Sudan and Israel, An Era of Change by Dr. Haim Koren. On October 23rd, the U.S., Israel, and Sudan issued a joint statement on the normalization of relations between Khartoum, which is the capital of Sudan, and Jerusalem. This step follows the peace agreements between Israel and the UAE and Bahrain and helps cement the nascent regional axis that features Israel as a highly prized ally rather than a vilified enemy. Time will tell to what extent this step will help the provisional Sudanese government overcome its internal differences and reach the 2022 elections, just 2 years away, as a functioning and effective body. And I would just say to that, time will tell indeed. The article continues, after the 2019 coup that toppled Bashir, a provisional government was set up to govern the country in the run-up to the 2022 elections as an uneasy compromise, between the will of the people to see the end of military rule and the military's ability to cling to the levers of power. President Abdel Fattah Burhan and his deputy Mohamed Hamdan Dekla, both army generals, are powerful remnants of the old regime, while Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, who we've mentioned before, and Supreme Court President Nomat Abdullah Mohamed Kair are supposed to represent the will of the people as senior civilian representatives to promote reform and change. The provisional government suffers from internal disagreements on a variety of issues and from constant attempts by the military to take over. But it was the only way out of the deadlock after the coup. So, you know, just listen to these words. The provisional government suffers from internal disagreements on a variety of issues and from constant attempts by the military to take over. So, very fragile. As such, it received the blessing of the Egyptian, Saudi, Ethiopian, and the UAE governments, as well as that of the U.S. and most of Europe. The internal disputes within the provisional government produced different approaches to normalization with Israel. While Burhan and Dekla pushed in this direction in order to improve Sudan's international standing and have it removed from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism, Hamdok opposed the move mainly out of fear of antagonizing public opinion. And I kind of picked that up from what he shared in that original article I had shared before they had made this peace agreement, and also picked it up from that overview of the Congressional Research Service's article, Sudan's Uncertain Transition. Hamdok is probably feeling a lot of heat, it appears to me. Anyway, the February 2020 Entebbe meeting between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Burhan was a significant breakthrough in normalizing Sudanese-Israeli relations and was accompanied by numerous publications from Sudanese sources about the imminence of normalization. A quote comes to my mind, an old quote, the only thing permanent is change. It seems like that's the one permanent thing you can count on is change, is there's going to be changes, always coming changes. Now, you know, Sudan, another term for Sudan is Kush. I've remarked on that before from the 101 Last Days Prophecy booklet that I've referred to for convenience from time to time, that Sudan is referred to as Kush. But for a little bit more, you know, just a little bit expansion of that, I want to look at Mark Hitchcock's book from 2010, The Amazing Claims of Bible Prophecy. And in that book, on the chapter of Russia, Iran, Israel, and the coming Middle East War, he mentions some of the main players in this invasion in Ezekiel 30, 38 and 39. And of course, I just want to concentrate on Sudan here. Ethiopia, he wrote, in parentheses, Kush. The Hebrew word Kush, and that's because, you know, that's the term used in the Bible, not Sudan. The Hebrew word Kush in Ezekiel 38:5 is often translated Ethiopia in modern Bible versions. Ancient Kush was called Kusu by the Assyrians and Babylonians, Kas, by the Egyptians, and Nubia by the Greeks. Secular history locates Kush directly south of ancient Egypt, extending down past the modern city of Khartoum, which is the capital of modern-day Sudan. Thus, the modern nation of Sudan inhabits the ancient land of Kush. Sudan is a hardline Islamic nation that supported Iraq in the Gulf War and harbored Osama bin Laden from 1991 to 1996, and I alluded to that earlier in the podcast. It is not surprising that this part of Africa would be hostile to the West and could easily join in an attack on Israel. That was written 10 years ago, and I think is very accurate. I mean, I think just because this is referencing the Bible and God's word, it's not possible for God to lie. And so at some point in time, Sudan will be part of that invading army. Well, I see I'm just about out of time. I hope you'll join with me next week as we continue to examine and keep our eye on what's taking place in the Middle East, in Northern Africa, in the Mediterranean Sea. These are the hot spots pertaining to Israel that I am taking so much time to examine, because I think this is very significant, as well as the times we're living in are significant. So God bless you all. I hope you join us next week. Good night.